You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Today is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2011. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. To learn more about beer and test your beer knowledge, go to GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. And if you have any questions, you can email us at any time, beersessions@gmail.com, or you can call in live now at 718-497-2128. We've got a really great lineup tonight on the show. Our special guest, Garrett Oliver, is back from Brooklyn Brewery. Welcome back, Garrett.
Good to be here.
Any really cool things that happened to you this weekend?
Oh, boy. Yeah, we got 17 tanks in the last week.
Wow.
So it's kind of like watching them do the space shuttle or something, standing those things up and building a little tank farm. And now we got to, you know, we chased the antelope, and now we got to eat it.
So Brooklyn Brewery is becoming the mecca of beer in New York, and we're really psyched about that.
Well, it's rock and roll, man. It's the way it is, I think, for everybody in the room. Just we're keeping on moving.
You brought some really cool beer. What is it?
This is a version of our beer, Black Ops. Black Ops is a barrel-aged imperial stout. It's aged in Woodford Reserve bourbon barrels. Normally, it's aged for 4 months, and this is the original version. This is the one that we made just for ourselves and where the name comes from, because it's called Black Ops because we didn't tell anybody at the brewery even that we had made it. So there were only five of us who actually knew the beer existed for 4 months, and I thought that if I just presented to everybody around the holiday time that nobody would actually think about the fact that I'd spent a lot of their money without asking, and it worked.
Amazing.
And eventually we brought it out commercially. But this is the first one from 2007, and what makes this different is that we actually left it in the barrel for 4 years. So this is what you would call, in port making, you would call it late bottle vintage, where you leave something in the barrel for a number of years. And so this was actually only bottled about 12 weeks ago, but it went into the barrel in 2007.
We've got a couple of really great guests here today, Mike Rothman from Atlantic Hops, and Peter Balut from Great Lakes Brewery in Toronto. Guys, what do you think about this beer that Garrett just poured for us?
This is beautiful. This is very robust, dark, just great aroma.
It's interesting how soft it becomes. You know, I mean, the contact with the wood. You know, the oxygen that makes its way through the wood. So, you know, what we can do actually side by side is you can taste 2007. Black Ops that's actually was put in the bottle in 2007, and then you can taste this side by side and see the difference, which is kind of fun.
So, Garrett, where could I try this besides here?
You personally, Jimmy, can come right over to my place, and I will pour it for you.
All right.
You know, others may have difficulties.
So this won't may not be available.
Now, this is one of those beers that, you know, we tell people if you want to taste this, you have to come meet us and have a conversation. We don't put this on a shelf for you to buy it, and we don't even get a chance to talk to you. So it's kind of like that.
All right. Well, we're going to start off talking to Mike Rothman from Atlantic Hops. Mike, we've had you on the phone a couple months ago. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing, because your mission is kind of a big challenge ahead of you.
Yeah, thanks first of all, thanks for having me in the studio here. We're basically trying to get locally grown hops into the hands of local craft brewers and local brewers. So, and by local, I guess I really mean regional. We're targeting tri-state area, New England, and mid-Atlantic. So, you know, we're Atlantic Hops has put in a facility to analyze and pelletize and package these you know, the hops from throughout the region so that we can get brewers hot pellets and high-quality, locally grown hot pellets. I mean, that's our goal.
Are there a lot of people growing hops in the Northeast?
There are a lot of pockets of activity, I think. And there are, for the most part, very small-scale growers. You know, but there's a lot of interest from both sides. I think the grower side and definitely the brewer side. But I think it's the industry right now is just taking shape, and there's quite a ways to go. But we felt like by putting in a facility at the early stage, we could encourage more people to grow. And we could talk to brewers about, you know, the reality that, well, we plan to produce pellets. Here's our facility.
Well, it's certainly something that I'm excited about, because, I mean, if you in the old days, going back into the early 1900s, New York State was one of the great hop growing regions of the United States. And, you know, we have advertisements that are up at the brewery showing the New York State hop fields and everything else, which were, of course, wiped out by a blight. Now, since then, and I'm sure the other two of us here who are making beer, you know, are pretty fascinated here, because this is kind of our fantasy world in a way, that we would actually have as many local ingredients as possible, hops being principal among them. But the thing always has been, you talk to the farmer, and the farmer is a farmer. He's a practical man. And he's saying, well, you know, if you want to contract for this many pounds, I'll grow it for you. But they didn't have any facilities to actually dry, palletize, or whatever else the brewer needs. That said, the farmers have generally sold out their crops all the time to people who want to do sort of fresh hop beers or whatever else. So at the same time, there's also a shortage of actual hops. I mean, I know that because I was trying to do, we make a beer for the Highline, and we were trying to get as much New York State ingredients as possible into it, and we pretty much couldn't buy any New York hops because they were all spoken for. So what's the next thing you're going to do? What's the level? What's the next level?
Well, that's a pretty, I think, quite an accurate, you know, overview of what's going on right now. And we decided to kind of, we felt like we needed to, like I said, to take the plunge and put in that facility at an early stage, probably, you know, earlier than some people's logic would probably suggest.
Go ahead. Tell us how much money. You know you want to tell us.
I definitely don't want to go there.
you know you want to tell us how much it costs.
I don't want to go there. But we do.
It's expensive, ladies and gentlemen.
So the next stage is to, we need to do outreach and get people to grow hops. And we need to educate the would-be or aspiring growers as to the market demand. What does a local brewer want?
So let's just go back to the basics. So hop gives flavor to beer. And why are you so interested in working with hops?
I kind of backed into it through, I'm an interest in beer. I suppose, like many things, just following as a consumer the development of the craft beer industry, kind of trying my hand a little bit at home brewing, thinking about, hey, maybe I could grow some hops, and then eventually meeting some people to partner up with who are in the hops industry already, and finding that as an area that I thought was, you know, interesting, you know, exciting, and has a lot of potential.
Then who are these people? I mean, what is the hop industry? It's so mysterious.
Well, I mean,
it is kind of. I mean, I was up in Cooperstown this weekend. We went to Belgian Comes to Cooperstown. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. And there's an old courthouse in Cooperstown, and there's hop emblems on the courthouse. And they said that even at one time, the plates that the judges, you know, used for their meals had hop, you know, emblems on them. You know, at one time, people made a lot of money from it.
Right. I mean, like you're saying, there is a really rich history of hop growing, and a lot of people made fortunes up there. There's a lot of old hop barns and hop houses.
And you
lot
find them still growing wild all over the place up there because, you know, it's not a plant that can be easily eradicated, fortunately. I found hop plants growing in Brooklyn, which are almost certainly remnants of the old beer gardens that there used to be everywhere. But the question is, I mean, I guess from the brewer's point of view, you know, the brewer is always like, wow, I mean, local hops, that's great. Now, where are you bringing in the expertise that's necessary to dry them and process them? Because that's the really tricky part. I mean, you have what is essentially a flour.
Right.
You have to dry this flour gently in a very particular way to a particular level of oxidation low and heat, and then process it in a way that leaves its best parts untrammeled. And it's not easy. People light entire hop warehouses on fire, and these are people who've been doing it for 20 years. So who you got?
All right, so we have, I know I don't have all of this expertise, so we've partnered with a group in the Midwest. They have a company there called Gorst Valley Hops, and they basically do this in the Midwest. They've got a regional processing facility. They grow hops. They've got a strong team, or now we do, of agronomists, horticulturists, people who know drying, cold storage engineers, that kind of stuff. So we have the technical expertise, not in terms of just pedigree. Well, you know, I'm an engineer, and I've been working in the hops industry for the past 5 years, and I've grown hops, and they have worked with the small scale grower in the Midwest, and a lot of the challenges sort of right sizing the approach in terms of equipment, in terms of cost, so that when you talk to a grower, you don't say, doesn't a piece of drying equipment or a harvester cost, you know, X hundred thousands of dollars? Well, we're working to solve some of those problems, and we have, I think now, a good history and knowledge base to help people grow hops. In terms of technical support and in terms of material support, how to build a trellis, how to manage the hop yard, nutrient management, throughout the year, pest IPM programs. And we have drying solutions, an appropriately sized drying solution with very clear instructions we can provide to growers on how to measure moisture content, to do it.
Now, for people who don't already know this, the hop is a quite robust plant. Comes up from a crown in the spring and grows vines that grow to be about 25 or more feet tall. It grows so fast on a bright, sunny day, if it's got enough water, that you can actually watch it grow. You can go out to lunch and it's in one position. You come back and it's wrapped around, its pole or trellis or wire, and gone 6 inches up in the direction. So it's quite a wonder to see. But it's attacked by everything. Red spider mites, funguses, all sorts of things. Everything wants to eat up your hops. So do you have a particular regimen that you guys have in mind for, are you going to be overseeing these hop yards at the various farmers and saying, okay, I'm going to tell you guys, this is our standard for how we're going to grow these?
Yes, for growers that we partner with, that we work with in a grower program or something along those lines, we absolutely provide that kind of technical support. We try to be proactive in the beginning in the way the trellis is set up to maximize airflow through the trellis, to minimize, moisture settling on the plants during the day, that kind of a thing. And then we work on, nutrient management, watering, again, designing IPM programs. But then also throughout the year, if growers in the program have an issue, they can contact us, take their iPhone, whatever they have, their phone out there, take a picture of this, send it to us and say, what's this? And if, we can talk to them about what stage that's at and what they can do about it if something like that happens. So you have to be very proactive.
So, Mike, you're really geared towards the industry. You're going to be supplying breweries.
Yes.
Okay. And do you have a section on your website that our listeners could go to and learn more about, hops in general and
sure
what you're doing?
All right. Our website's atlantichops.com, and there are sections on the grower program, hops, and basically, what we're trying to accomplish. And, back to what you said earlier about what's next is we've got to convince growers that they can sell their hops without contracts, because we're telling them if a brewer in this region has never brewed with anything you've given them, they're not going to commit to something, and that we need to focus on quality, quality, quality. And we've designed sort of the harvesting, drying, and palletizing processes to maximize quality. Our goal is to put out a local product that's of higher quality than you would get otherwise, and that's one factor that we need to compete on for business.
Well, are you guys going to help establish new hop yards? I mean, I certainly know people with land. I know there's interest from New York State in reestablishing the business. There seems to be all the bits and pieces, but I haven't really seen them come together yet. So are you going to be mostly brokering existing farmers, or are you going to be looking to establish new yards as well?
No, we are really focused on establishing new yards, and that's really where this Atlantic Grower Program comes in start to finish, helping people get the hop yard up and running and then circle back and bridge that link with the brewer.
I just got a quick
this
question.
Is Peter from Great Lakes Brewery.
How are you going to decide which, because there are so many hop varieties, how are you going to pick or steer farmers to grow certain ones that, that brewers are after and not grow something that nobody really wants?
Well, and that's definitely one of our roles is to, like I said, make that connection back from the brewer and say, we know brewers want X. So, I mean, there's that issue. Demand play is going to play a role in what we suggest people grow. And then there's also certain varieties are better suited to this region than to other regions. And we're not going to recommend, you know, people plant a hop that is just not going to thrive here.
We've seen Willamette grow really well, you know.
Yeah, Willamette would be there, Cascade, Nugget. And then there are some other varieties as well, and it will partially depend on the individual situation and site location. So there are a number of factors, but that's part of what we do with the grower program is work with them on planning what varieties they should plant.
Well, this is so amazing, and it's so great that you came on, and you will be with us for the rest of the show. My last question before we take a break is: a couple of years ago, I heard as a bar owner there was a hop shortage. And because of that, the price of beer was going up.
You have a gift for understatement, my friend.
I never quite understood it, and I do know that the price of beer for me has gone up a lot in the last, you know, 5-10 years or whatever. What was that?
Believe me, the brewers ate the actual rise in the price of beer. The rise that you saw was a small fraction of what actually happened. I explain it to people this way. You know, I mean, hop shortages have happened now and again over time, but since the establishment of the craft brewing industry, there had never been a hop shortage, and this was the problem. So you had basically 1,700 breweries, pretty much, that had grown up with hops being available. So say you are a fish restaurant, and you go to your fish guy every day, and you buy some fish. Someday, maybe there's no sea bass, but you get pretty much the stuff that you need. And one day, one bright, sunny day that you'll never forget, you go to your fish guy and you say, I'd like to get some fish. And he says, not only do I not have any fish, I will not have any fish. And if you would like to have some fish at some point in the future, you will need a fish contract. And you know, you say, well, wait a minute, I've known you for 20 years and my restaurant is based on fish. And he's like, too bad. You know, the fish lord from somewhere else has come and bought all the fish that there are. People in China and India are eating more fish, and there's no fish for you. And you're like, oh, bleep. So there was a full-on panic, prices went up by 500%, 2007.
And then what happened that made it come back to normal, or is it not back to normal?
A few things happened. The recession happened. That's dampened demand to a certain extent. It slowed down growth in India and China, the first things that people want when they have a little bit more income around the world, no matter what, is they want more meat, they want whiskey, and they want beer. Not necessarily in that order. So it's among the first things that people grab. And when people in China, given the population, want a little bit more beer, they can suck all of the out of the market. And I think that a lot of us learned a lot about market economics. You know, when you have a spot market where you just go to your guy and you buy it, the difference between slightly too much and slightly too little is a violent difference. And slightly too much, things are normal. That's the market that we're used to for things like milk. There's always more milk than you need. But if there was just slightly less milk than everybody wanted, milk would cost 3 times or 4 times what it does. And same with oil or anything else. And hops went like that. Also, the big brewers are looking to emulate us. They're looking to make beers like ours. How do they do that? Well, they buy our hops, which gives them the ability to cut off our oxygen supply
and get flavor, you
know, and get the flavor at the same time, which is a pretty neat trick.
Wow.
Perhaps you feel you're being treated unfairly.
I feel like I'm this is probably the... All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Garrett Oliver, Atlantic Hops, and Great Lakes Brewery on Beer Sessions Radio.
Like your life in a freeform style.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Wow, we're here with the coolest lineup ever, talking about hops. Garrett Oliver, we got Atlantic Hops, and we got Peter Bullitt from Great Lakes Brewery, who just walked in. Peter, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm awesome. Thank you.
So your brewery's up in Toronto,
yep.
And you come down to New York to hang out.
Yep. Not to be confused with Great Lakes Cleveland, another great brewery. Great Lakes, Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And we've been brewing beer 25 years next year.
Well, we've just been talking to Mike from Atlantic Hops and Garrett Oliver about hops. What do you think? Where do you get your hops?
The exact same is happening in Ontario. There is a resurgence of farmers that are growing. And I got really excited when he said he was setting up a plant that actually pelletized, because that's a problem at home right now. Nobody's gone to that step. But the growers are starting to get together and talk about varieties and farmers. I spoke with a couple that are growing some hops straight for us. Unfortunately, without pelletizing ability, so we're going to just put fresh hops right in a couple of harvest brews that we're going to do in the fall.
Wow. Well, listen, Europe and Canada, Canada is different than America.
Yes, it is.
In many ways.
Dollar's bigger.
Yeah. What'd you say?
The dollar's bigger.
The dollar's bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But we can carry our guns in the open.
True enough.
And I'm wondering if there's a difference in Canadian beer drinkers and American beer drinkers.
I do feel so. The difference we talk about at home, we used to say that the American craft brewing scene is about 10 years ahead of us in Canada and Ontario. And I think that bridge is slowly gapping, and I think we're maybe about four. He talks about Garrett talking about barrel aging 4 years ago. Nobody knew what that was. Well, they knew, but nobody was actively even trying to think about trying anything like that.
Well, let's think about all the really great Canadian breweries that we know. We know in Montreal, there's Du de Ciel, there's Hopfenstark, some real small breweries. Garrett, anything that pops
in
your mind?
I know a bunch of them up there. I mean, in the early days, you had McHouslin, et cetera. But the thing I find fascinating about the relationship between the United States and Canada when it comes to beer is that Canada, I have to say, is, even to your average brewer who gets around, an almost total mystery. There is almost no communication in either direction. Even like Mondial de la Bière, very few American brewers even get invites or get emails about it. And for your average American brewer, brewers in Belgium and England and places much further away are better known to them, not just through their beers, but also personally, than people in Canada, which is kind of weird, and I haven't figured out why it is. In Ontario in particular, you do have a state monopoly, which makes things spectacularly difficult. When it comes to actually getting, you know, even if you just want to, you know, pour a beer at a particular event. So that makes things more difficult. But I think that it's almost like, you know, we haven't thought about Canada as much as we should, just because it is so close, that it's like, you know, it's like that thing where you have a neighborhood, two neighborhoods away, and you've never been there, but you've been to France.
So you're in Toronto. I mean, what is it like? I mean, you said there's a monopoly. How do you sell? You know, what's the system? Three-tier?
So the local brewers go direct to two outlets, basically. There's LCBO, which is the world's largest purchaser of alcohol, and our beer store. Both, so the government-controlled LCBO, that's Liquor Control Board, and the beer store is owned by the giant brewers. So there is quite a monopoly and a big door for American brewers.
You at the brewery, if I want your beer, I have to go to one of those places?
Yeah.
And can I go to a restaurant or a bar?
Absolutely, yeah. We ship direct to, all the interior brewers can ship direct to the bars on their own, and same with the liquor stores. And then every brewery typically has an on-site store as well they can sell there.
And then where do I get an accent like yours?
Come hang out with us a little bit.
I mean, for real. I mean, I think the Canada is pretty cool. And we're happy to be like closely associated with you. And I'm speaking as American.
Yes.
I can speak for America.
Yeah.
You know, what else makes being a Toronto unique? I mean, Toronto is like a cool city. It's as international as New York, right?
Yeah, it's very similar in a lot of ways, other than the size and sprawl. Because we're, I guess, similar to here, because we're on the lake. We can only go in three directions. It's grown considerably in the last bunch of years, just as the craft brewing scene has. And we're in around 5 million people now in Toronto, and huge tourist spot for sure. And same, just breweries are just having a great time, and a lot more people are accepting craft beer into their fridges.
So if we go up to Toronto, let's say we pick a nice fall. What's the best time in Toronto, fall or summer?
I think fall. Spring, fall. It's like, I call it sweater weather. I think it's probably similar here. Just the summers are just as hot as they are here. And it gets a little bit crazy, although that's when all the good beer festivals are on. But the fall, for sure, is, I think that's my favorite.
So where would we go in Toronto? We want to check out some good beer, some good food.
Yep. There's a lot of great restaurants and pubs that are pouring strictly craft beer now, which you didn't see even a couple of years ago. And there's more and more opening up. There's more and more breweries opening up and contract breweries. So there's a lot of beer and a lot of great food to go with it.
Like what? Besides your Great Lakes Brewing, name a couple other breweries, a couple pubs that you like.
Yeah,
up there.
There's Cameron's Brewery. They're a great brewer as well. Black Oak, Amsterdam, Steam Whistle, Mill Street. We've actually put together something called the OCB, which is the Ontario Craft Brewers Association. So there's almost 30 of us involved in that. And basically the mission is just to promote and enjoy craft beer with people.
And there are a few long-standing beer bars.
Oh yeah,
that are pretty serious. You know, one of them just put in a little system of their own, and they're brewing away, doing a bunch of limited beers that are in collaboration with some of the local brewers.
Yep. Yeah, that's probably talking about Barvolo. That's probably one of the best beer bars in Toronto.
Which is kind of a fun place because it's like two sons and the father.
That's right.
You know, and
Italian,
you know,
too.
Yeah, they're kind of Italian, and the whole thing just has that, you know, that vibe to it. And just had a great time there, you know, like a month and a half ago, you know, for Toronto Beer Week. And one evening, just everybody out.
There's a Toronto Beer Week.
There is a Toronto Beer Week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know anything about this.
Yeah,
they don't fill me in. Come on.
They don't tell us anything.
Toronto Beer Week.
That's like our accent. We keep it to ourselves.
At this great beer bar that you like, what's it called? Barvolo?
Volo, yeah.
Do they only sell Ontarian beers? Do they sell international beers?
They've actually, now that the family trio have started an importing company as well. So they're starting to bring in some beers. I still didn't get enough information, but I think they're only able to sell to restaurants. It's not able to go through the liquor distribution system just because of the way that it's set up there. But, yeah, these guys are actually brewing now in the restaurant as well. And not only them, but a lot of the other brewers were getting together and doing collaboration beers. And it's constant now, where a couple of years ago, you barely would talk to the guys.
And where do you sell? Do you only sell in Ontario?
We're a little bit across the country. We go east to Nova Scotia and out west to Manitoba.
So this is what's the name of this beer?
This is a Crazy Canuck.
I like it. Can I have a little more?
Yeah.
It's good.
So this is a West Coast style pale ale. It's just loaded with Amarillo hops, dry hopped as well.
That brings up an interesting point. I've noticed that for a long time it seemed like IPA was the go-to beer. And now I feel like that the IPA is kind of like losing its grip, where it's like you have to suddenly go with a double IPA or Imperial IPA or some strong IPA, or you're getting pale ales that are as hoppy as IPAs used to be.
Yeah.
And it makes me, I hardly want to get an IPA anymore because I feel like there's a lot more variety.
As I mentioned that, you know, Canada's about 5 years behind now, IPAs are really, really big and fun. And this has got to be one of the hoppiest beers right now, by nose for sure, and probably by bitterness. In Ontario, and we were same thing, just trying to push the limits and push the people's palates. So we're getting emails of like, this is the absolute worst beer I've ever had in my life, I can't believe you're putting this in a can, to this is the only beer I'm going to drink ever. So it's quite a mix. We're definitely shocking some palates, but at the same time the word's getting out and we're having some fun.
I think we have the pendulum now swinging back in the other direction, you know, because of people like Jimmy and a lot of other people who, you know, they love their hoppy beers, but they haven't undergone the entire lupulin shift of only drinking hoppy beers.
Lupulin?
The lupulin shift. Are you unfamiliar with the term?
Garrett, please define.
You know, when you get up to the West Coast, they respond. They talk about the lupulin shift, and this is the point at which extreme hoppiness becomes normal to you. And so, you know, beers that are 70 IBUs and 8.5% are your standard drinking beers, and then you take things that are beyond that. The problem, of course, is that, you know, if you used to like Pilsner or whatever else, you can't taste it anymore.
Yeah.
Because your taste buds are kind of blown out. Now, if you went to Southern California, they would dispute this, but of course, they are wrong.
It's almost like coffee, too. We've noticed that in other beverages. We've seen that in coffee. We've seen that in wine. Things get stronger and stronger.
Absolutely.
But guys like Dan Shelton have been arguing for a few years about, you know, having more session beers. Oh, and I like what you made. You brought in last week. You brought in your cuvée.
Yeah.
Cuvée
Crochet Rouge. But, you know, we have a bunch of beers that are coming down the pike around the brewery that are really, you know, about things that we want. And that, you know, I mean, I'm best known among brewers for what I call the 4-pint principle, which is when we make one of our regular beers, I mean, not like Black Ops, but I want you to want 4 pints. At the minimum, I want you to sit down and say, you know what? I'd love to have four of these.
I like this guy, Garrett Oliver. That's how I feel. When I'm at a bar, if I can, there's some beers I can drink, and halfway through, I don't like it. Some I may drink one, and in the second beer, I don't want.
You know what?
I want my 4 pints.
I have news for people. Like, if it's a regular beer, an IPA, a pale ale, you get halfway through it, and you don't like it, that's a bad beer, okay? It means the person can't brew. When people make their decision, everybody tries to aim for the top of the glass. And I always tell brewers, the point that you need to aim for is that last fifth of the glass. That's where your beer needs to taste its best, because, you know, that's where people are going to decide, I'm going to have a margarita, I'm going to go do something else, I'm leaving, I'm going to have another one of these. In fact, I would like to have 4 of these.
So, Peter, that's from Great Lakes, I'm on my second pint of your, what's it called, Crazy Canuck. Can I have a little more, please?
Sure, man.
Jimmy wants 4 of those.
I like this. And Mike from Atlantic Hops, have you been up to Toronto?
I have. I haven't been in there in a while, but we've been, we've been interacting with some growers in Canada as well. As he was saying, there's more interest in growing hops up there too. So we're trying to figure out, you know, the logistics of getting, you know, plant material back and forth across the borders, in terms of them being able to send stuff to us to be pelletized, because it's feasible, given if it's dried properly.
I can tell you lots of plant material goes back and forth across that border all the time.
True. Plant material maybe is a bad choice.
In fact, it's even related plant material.
Yes, related. It is.
That's the other show that they don't have.
That's next hour.
But, you know, going back to hops, because hops is fascinating. The more I learn about it, I still don't have a straight answer. It's like, you know, hops is fragile and beautiful. And then it's like, I still don't understand how we can get all the hops that we need and into our beers. It's amazing.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of what people often don't know is that a lot of those West Coast beers, and, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about them. I have a different philosophy. I like them a lot. A lot of them are full of hop extract and hop oils.
Right.
You know, I mean, the ones that people talk about the most are full of extracts and hop oils, because, you know, these guys they're coming out of that area. And it's funny, I was talking to a hop guy and he said, well, you look at all these, you know, extracted oils and whatever else, and all the craft brewers say they would never use them. Well, who do you think they're selling them to? They're not selling them to the big brewers. What are they going to do with hop oil?
Yeah.
You know, so actually that's a big thing in California. That's one way of getting a lot more hop aroma and flavor into your beer. You know, and I like a lot of these beers a lot, so I'm not, I'm not dogging anybody. We just don't go there ourselves. But what's interesting is what a hard thing it is to get and keep hop aroma in beer,
right,
and to keep hop aroma in the hops themselves. I mean, you get out in the field and it's a beautiful thing and you're feeling nature and whatever else, but putting hops in a package which can last for a year or two is a very highly technical pursuit. And it's not easy to do. So I'm very excited about what Mike's doing.
That is, you know, that's a really almost precisely part of the challenge, is how to keep those minerals and those aromas and the essential oils intact throughout the process of harvesting, drying, and pelletizing, so that you get that out of the hops, the hop pellets.
I can tell you, we used to have cascades from two different companies, Yakima Chief and Hop Union, and we kept them as two completely separate hops. They were so different because of the way they had been processed, they could not be traded off one for the other. They couldn't be, you know, we blended them sometimes,
right,
but they were two completely separate hops.
How big are these companies? I mean, you're in the scheme of things, a craft brewery, Brooklyn Brewery, and the large breweries are buying hops too. I mean, these companies, what are the top hop companies in America?
Well, I'll give you some idea. I mean, Brooklyn Brewery this year will do about 140,000 barrels. Sam Adams is 25 times our size. Anheuser-Busch InBev is 200 times their size. So it puts things in perspective. You know, if you feel like you're going around New York, you see a lot of Brooklyn Lager, you're talking about companies that are thousands of times the size of our company.
But so when
those guys, even if they want a little bit, they want something which is going to be dusted off in a corner every once in a while, that will eat up more hops than our entire brewery would produce in a year.
No, I understand that. But what are some of the big names in hops? Because we're going to close out this segment, but give me like a couple of the companies, because we're, you know, your industry and we're just consumers.
Hop Union.
Yakima Chief were the same people. Barth Haas. You have hops from England doing a very nice job. You know, there are a lot of importers and processors. Hopsteiner are major. They wouldn't be really known, you know, to even most homebrewers. But they'd be known to all.
So there's
a
couple different companies. It's not just like one or two monopolies.
No, I mean, everybody's trying, you know, and there are new ones popping up since the hop crisis, because they're saying, well, everybody needs hops, but it's really aroma hops that everybody needs.
So when Atlantic Hops comes on, you guys will be known as Atlantic Hops, and that'll you'll be a whole nother market. Another source, you know?
That's the idea, yes.
I used to grow hops in front of the brewery. I gave it up a few years ago because I got too busy. I'm offering to you now this great opportunity to come grow hops up the front of Brooklyn Brewery once again to reestablish a hop yard here in Brooklyn.
All right, we'll be there.
But so this is exciting for you, Garrett, then, right?
The idea that
there's another source of hops possibly in Northeast?
I'm excited. I'm sure that Rich and Peter are excited, too.
Yeah, we've got a good little track of land ourselves that if you figure out the border thing, come on up and grow some hops on our place as well.
Great tracks of land.
Yes.
Quick shout out to our sponsor, greatbrewers.com. We'll be back in a short break, and we'll talk about Single Cut Beersmith, a new beer coming from Brooklyn.
We will rock you.
Beer Sessions Radio.
Buddy, you're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street, gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place, singing, we will rock you. We will rock you. Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street. You're gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, a big disgrace. Waving your banner all over the place.
Public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at noon, Dave Arnold, the author of CookingIssues.com, will discuss new and innovative techniques, equipment, and ingredients. Call in with your own questions to see if Dave and the crew can solve your cooking issues. Again, that's Tuesdays at noon on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. There's so many great shows on heritageradionetwork.com. We're so happy to be here. Beer Sessions Radio every Tuesday. You got some really cool guys. I don't even know. Has anyone else in this room listened to Heritage Radio Network besides me? Garrett?
I have.
What do you like? You like the main course, the Patrick Martins?
Yeah, no, I've been on here with, I've listened to and been on with the guys from Snacky Tunes, you know, which I really like a lot.
Love those guys. And there's Cutting the Curd with Ann Saxelby. And does anybody else know any of the shows?
No.
Well, you will, because Heritage Radio Network is growing, and it's awesome.
I've listened to many of the shows, Jimmy.
What?
I've listened to many of the shows,
you have?
Jimmy.
So which ones do you like?
I like the ones that I've been on. Or my mission, my brewery.
Single Cut Beersmith.
Thank you.
All right. Well, here's our new guest. It's Rich Busetta.
Busetta. Thank you.
And you've got a beer. You call yourself Single Cut Beersmith, but you're not a brewery.
Right.
But you're a brand.
Right. That's a great way to sum it up, and it sort of crystallizes my background and where I'm going. I'll very briefly tell you about my history with brewing and beer and craft beer. Well, I've only been in the beer industry for the last 4 years. Before that, I was a hardcore home brewer, and my profession was advertising. Well, as I climbed the ranks in advertising and continued to have less and less fun as you do so, and it becomes more about...
But Rich, slow down. So are you making beer currently?
Of course.
But as a home brewer?
Yes.
And what's your goal? You want to have a brewery?
Right.
You want to have like a nano brewery? You want to have like a
full-fledged brewery? We're going to have a 30-barrel system.
And you want to have that in New York?
It'll be north of the city in Rockland County.
Okay. Single-cut beers. But let me tell you what I think about it.
Okay.
Because we've talked a couple of times and I heard about it. I think it's a band from Soweto in South Africa. That's funny, guys.
I'm thinking that, in fact, he is a samurai, and he, when he goes into a battle, he's like, I will destroy you with a single cut.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to use that, Garrett.
Well, tell us, Rich, what exactly does single cut, one word, mean?
Great question. Single cut when I came up with the name for the brewery, I thought, well, there are a few things I certainly don't want it to be named after, one of which is a dog or a goose or any kind of wildlife that's been done ad nauseum.
No wombats.
Wombat. Single cut wombat.
I hadn't thought of that. That would have been pretty cool.
See, we're gonna have so much fun. Now, Peter, you guys, what do you have to say about the word single cut?
I don't know. I think it's pretty cool, I'll be honest. That is a neat expression, saying, I will kill you with a single cut. It's quite dark.
We do have a tagline, but I
went to film school. I watched all those Kurosawa movies, but this is what I think that it means. I mean, what I think in terms of cuts, what people refer to as cuts from distilling, a cut being a run or whatever else, and someone, you know, slicing something out which is itself singular and presenting it and telling you this is the one part of this whole thing that you actually wanted. How close am I?
You're close in terms of what the general perception will be. It's the sort of thing.
I'm not doing well, am I?
No, I think that was a great step.
We're trying to help you because
no, I thought it was a great
step. He needs money and he wants to open a brewery.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And we love you. And I actually love the name.
You only have a single chance to invest.
All right, the name originates from. When I came up with the name, I thought, well, what's something that I really love that speaks to me, that I'm all about? And aside from craft beer, I played guitar most of my life, and I've played primarily a electric guitar and a solid body single cut style. It's a style of body style of guitar is a single cut. But I liked the double play on it. I thought, well, you know what? Maybe 0.005% of the audience will ever make that connection, and to everyone else,
so you're working on the name.
No, but the name is there.
No, it's good. So single cut beersmith. What beer are we drinking right now? Because you do make good beers. Julie Barnard, who's been on our show, she's good friends with the guys at Bargrate Harry, Mission Dolores. She loves your beers.
Yeah, Julie's
and
great.
That's how we learn about you. So tell us about the beer we're drinking right now.
We're drinking the Alpine Amber. This is, to me, just. I loved, Garrett, your four-pint analogy, and I think that a lot of the beers that we're going to aim for are going to follow suit in that style, and I would like to think that this is one of them. It's a 5.5% amber ale, and it's fairly hoppy, which I am a hop head, I'll admit it, but it just goes down very smooth.
So similar to that, the expression the four pint is also it tastes like another.
Well, the British have right. The British have a wonderful word for this, which we don't have, and that word is Moorish.
Moorish, yeah.
You know, and it's like meaning that you want more, and it just doesn't work in American English. Now I'm going to put you on the spot here for a second,
okay,
Rich.
Okay, I'm ready.
You know, this is a good spot though.
Okay,
and
I'm buckled in.
Okay. You're gonna get out there in a very crowded beer market.
Right.
What is the thing that you think you can do in your heart of hearts
yep.
better than everybody else, and you're gonna bring it?
That's a great question. We're gonna be all about integrity. We're gonna be all about. We are the only people who will ever touch the beer that will ever find its way into a glass.
Your distributor will be very disappointed.
Wait, Rich.
And we're going to self-distribute as well.
Wait, so on. This is cool. We're having fun with you, but every time we say your name, Single Cut Beersmith,
right?
You heard around the world.
Yeah.
You're going to be the only ones to touch the beer that goes in that glass? Is that what you said?
That's what I said.
What does that mean?
That means that we're the only ones who are going to brew it. It won't be contract brewed or farmed out or anything like that. Everything will be under our guise.
All right. I just got a question. We have an email question that just came in. And I've got the perfect panel here. I've got Garrett Oliver, Brooklyn Brewery. We've got this guy from
Peter
Toronto. And Rich, who's scouting out a brewery location in New York City. And I know that Garrett's interested because they just expanded their brewery. Okay. I'm in New York City, and I'm looking for the perfect location for a brewery. And have either of you surveyed the city? I even know that Peter has done some real estate in New York. So have you surveyed the city or the surrounding region? What would be a good place to locate a small brewery in the New York City region?
Well, I certainly know Brooklyn well because we looked for 7 years for a new brewery location. And we ended up going through a wall into buildings next door. But Brooklyn is really, really, really tough.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard rumors for years of people opening up a brewery in the Bronx.
Right.
and
is that for real? I mean,
I'm not entirely sure whether it's real or not. I assume that it's real. At least people are having a go at it. But, of course, if it took us 7 years to find a place in Brooklyn – I can imagine that in the Bronx it could be tough, too. I wouldn't be surprised, though, that if you could... I mean, I'll bet that if you, for example, opened a brewery on Staten Island, you probably have such serious Staten Island loyalty, et cetera, and maybe there's some land out there. But it's, it's New York City. There's a reason why there are not so many breweries here. I mean, it's a very, very hard place to do this kind of business. You have to truck your materials in and out, and it's and it's hard. And that's it's just a reality of the situation. And I remember when there were over a dozen breweries in the city, in the late 90s, and almost all of them are gone.
What happened to them?
Well, most of them were brew pubs, brew pubs basically, we can have a whole show about this, but brew pubs essentially in New York City didn't survive the success of craft beer. The success of craft beer actually is what killed the brew pub. Huh. The fact that you can go to all kinds of places, including Jimmy's number 43, and he's going to have a spectacular range of beers, including things that are local, and then you as the brew pub have like 8 beers. And they better be the best bloody things you ever had in your entire life that people are going to go in there now. Whereas back in the old days, that was the only place you could get good beer. Not anymore.
What, Peter? You know New York?
A little bit, not as well as I should.
Where would you open a small brewery around here?
Well, when you asked that question at first, what I first started thinking about was a brew pub, not realizing that there was such a demise of these poor guys. But I've been hanging out in Astoria for 3 years now, and a lot of craft beer bars have opened up in the last 3 years, and the draft selection has expanded. Like, I can't believe how many beers they have on tap, actually. And a couple of them are doing growlers out. I just thought naturally, being in the hood there, Astoria would be an awesome place for us for either a very small brewery or a brew pub.
And Rich,
well, I think the problem is that New York City is too popular. Post the Giuliani and et cetera administrations.
Perhaps you feel you're being treated unfairly.
You can get them with a single cut.
I've researched all these places, and they're just too expensive. That's the bottom line. Yeah. The real estate.
So where are you going to open your brewery?
It's going to be in Rockland County.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, north of the city, about a half hour.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So who else is up there? There's Defiant, right?
Defiant, that's right.
Who's the brewer at Defiant?
I think it's still Neil. I think it's...
What's his name? Yeah. Neil what?
You're putting me on the spot?
Come on.
I'm on the spot here, too.
His face is in front of my mind, right. But sorry, Neil. I forgot your name today.
Neil from Defiant. It's in Pearl River,
Pearl
New
River.
York.
That's right.
That's a pretty neat place. I like their beers. How long has he been brewing? About 3 or 4 years now, Garrett?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, have you been over to his brewery?
I have not yet.
Yeah, it's an interesting brewery. We've heard good things and bad about him. I'm only saying that as honestly because I know that he's came out, he regrouped, and I like a lot of his beers. I really do.
Well, we certainly followed the model in the early years of doing our own distributing, which has its advantages and disadvantages, and Rich is going to discover both, no doubt, getting out there and doing it. But beer is beer's a tough business. It's not water polo, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. And the reason why I asked that question is that my dad was in advertising. I grew up in advertising. You know, he was a creative supervisor for Y&R.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, yeah. So, you know, we grew up around that. And it's, and so when I, that's one reason I asked you that question that, that, you know, I think that you need something which is going to distinguish you. And do you have an idea that floats around your head? You're like, I mean, when there, when other people aren't around, and of course, no one's really listening at the moment, so you can tell us, what do you really truly believe? It's like, you know what? I can really bring this in a way that nobody else is going to do it. You know, they will never see this coming. I'm going to
Got the answer for you. I think by saying Rockland County, I think that he's already got it.
It's well, that's part of it. There's a huge population.
You're in a Rockland County state of mind? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, I do know Nyack very well, back from my cycling days. I used to cycle to Nyack and back, which is a big destination.
Your record has been erased, and you don't need to talk about that today. I can tell you that as your counsel.
Garrett, when we close out, do you have the closing song in mind? Garrett.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum.
We're going to have to give a shout out to our supporter, the Good Beer Seal.
Hey, Jimmy, it's Jack. I just got to say we got an email from a listener who says, single cut, great name, great beer.
Nice. And do they have a name?
Dave.
Nice plant.
Dave, you're awesome.
Thank you.
Dave loves you, Rich.
Oh, that's great. I have no idea who he is, but thank you, Dave.
We tried your one. Do you have one more beer for us before we go out, Rich?
I do have a lager.
So what should we tell people? It said, if you're interested in reaching Rich Puccetta,
yes,
Single Cut Beersmith.
Yeah, you can go to our website.
What's the website?
Singlecutbeersmiths.com.
All right. And people can find out if they want to give you money or invest in some way.
That's right.
And you can say it. How much money are you trying to raise to get open?
Well, we've made it modular. We've got a number of scenarios on the table right now. Best case scenario is that we buy the building we're going to be in, so it's a long-term solution, and that would be in excess of $2 million. Minus that, we're talking $1.175.
So you're talking about, you know, a little bit of money.
Yeah.
You go check it out. Let's say your website again, please.
Singlecutbeersmiths.com.
All right.
I have an idea for you for free. You know, in your tap room, you should have a cut of pork, and it's going to be cured, and you're going to tell people that it's actually the buccetta. You know, I was like, well, that's the culatello, you know, and over there is this. But this piece, this is the best piece you're going
to
get.
Garrett, you know, I need you to help me with that because you're the food master.
I'll bet a guy like you never had a buccetta, but here, we got the best buccetta on the entire East Coast.
Done and done.
You know, and you know what? We can do it in a single cut.
I'm going to do that this weekend. Come to Jimmy's.
Jimmy's about to
Jimmy's number 43.
Wait, can I have one second, Jimmy? I just got to give props to this black op that we had earlier from Garrett. Outstanding.
Awesome.
Wow.
The buccetta cut, it's only from Heritage Foods, USA.
Exactly.
It's
all
right. It's our parent.
All
right.
All Berkshire Park. Shout out.
Guys, we're going to wrap it up, and this is the coolest night ever, but guess what? Good Beer Seal Bar Events, Mugs Ale House will be having a rated A weekend, August 13th and 14th. Check out the beers that they rate A. From Union Beer. They have beers like Firestone Walker, Allagash, and others. Browery Lane, which is a new Good Beer Seal bar in New York City, is having a Saison sampler on August 18th. And later this month, Rattle and Hum will be going on a tour of Victory Brewing. And I'm going to push a really special beer dinner August 17th at Jimmy's number 43. We've got a great guest chef. There was a guy named Ryan Tate. He was a chef for a long time at Savoy Restaurant in New York City. He's coming in doing a meal, and his choice was sour beers. So we're going to have Jolly Pumpkin and Cantillon.
Can I give a little plug for Toronto?
Go for it. Tell us.
So this weekend is Toronto's biggest beer festival, Toronto Beer Fest. And we do something there called Cascapalooza, which is just the plethora of...
And mostly Ontarian beers, or you have beers from all over the world?
Mostly Ontario, but we get some importers coming
right.
as well.
Mike,
ladies and gentlemen, 1 hour on the plane.
Are you up?
One hour on the plane. Toronto.
1 hour, yeah.
Garrett, anything coming up at Brooklyn Brewery?
There's always stuff coming up. We're about to release The Companion in a few weeks, beer that we talked about before, which celebrates the book coming out. And we're just getting all these new tanks online. It's, you know, it used to be August was a quiet time, and there are no quiet times anymore.
And Mike, you just did a hop growing workshop.
We just did a workshop in Tarrytown, New York, on a full-day workshop on small-scale hop production, which was great. I would finish by saying, if you're thinking at all about planting hops next spring, now's the time to get in touch and start planning.
So I'd like to thank our sponsors again at greatbrewers.com. And thank you to Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com. Thanks to Garrett, Rich, Peter, and Mike for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Good night, and thank you!
Cheers,
Garrett,
to you.
Where's your song?
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Whiskey.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. The long-awaited documentary, The Vanishing of the Bees, will be screening in Astoria, Queens, at the Broadway branch of the Queens Public Library on Monday, September 19th. I know that seems like a long ways away, but it isn't. It will be broadcast from 6 to 8 p.m. More information about this fascinating look at bee life and colony collapse disorder can be found at their website at www.vanishingbees.com. I also wanted to add that the producers are all working on a 30-minute educational video for high school students, so any parent or teacher should check out the site to see what he or she can do to work with the team to bring this into a school curriculum. The film has a Facebook page as well that discusses current events that affect bees. This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Finger on the Pulse and City Winery are proud to present the Summer Barbecue Blowout Festival, August 6th, from noon to 4 p.m. The barbecue is happening at City Winery, located at 155 Varick Street in New York City. Restaurants featured at this event are Empire Mayonnaise, Van Dag, Momofuku Milk Bar, Imperial No. 9, Mile End, Mexi-Q, Kraft, Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, The Meatball Shop, and Dos Toros. Providing the soundtrack for the day are Midnight Magic, Pewter Magic, New Villager, Punches, Ducky, DJ Autobot, and the Snacky Tune DJ. VIP and general admission tickets are available at citywinery.com. Finger on the Pulse for City Winery, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Heritage Foods USA, New York Magazine, Reka Vodka, Sonar, Smile, Guilt City, Sub-Zero, and Wolf. Please come out and join us for a day of fun, food, and dancing. For more information, go to www.fotpnyc.com.